So just a second here. This is Marketing Your Service Business in a Tough Economy, Part 1, and I'm Mari Guillasser. And as I had mentioned, tonight we're going to be talking about messaging, how to communicate with your clients in this economy so that you can have the greatest customer loyalty, the most sales, sort of the easiest process there. And then next week we will be looking at specific tactics you can take. So I want to start off with saying a little bit about why I'm doing these calls in general and why I'm doing this call in particular. I call this the Authentic Entrepreneur Series because I often meet people who say, oh, you know, you do business coaching. I want some help with my business, but I just don't want to do cold calls, or I just don't want to be a slimy person that has to promise things that aren't true, so I guess I'm not really a business person. And that sort of always makes my eyes roll back in my head because I believe that really successful business people are also always really true to their own values, really true to what they believe, what is right for them in terms of ethics and also in terms of doing things that make sense to them. And I don't think anybody really loves doing cold calls or hard sales or that kind of thing. Authentic entrepreneurship is about making your business work for you and then also allowing it to work for your clients. And then the reason I want to talk about marketing your service business in a tough economy is that it's very easy for people to get confused in a tough economy about what we actually need to do in response to the economy. A lot of times people get either overly pessimistic or they try to ignore the whole thing and convince themselves that it's doom and gloom or, well, it's not going to affect my business. And neither of those really puts you in a place of power where you can actually do something. Entrepreneurs, business owners tend to be very creative people. They tend to be people who really have a vision, and they also tend to be great problem solvers. So if we can break down what's going on and give you the tools, very often a tough economy is also the time when your business can really thrive. And that's actually not just, you know, Mari's theory as, oh, well, I like to work with entrepreneurs. There's a lot of evidence that over the last several cycles of recession in our economy over the last 100 years that businesses who were proactive about their marketing during that period gained customer base, gained market share, and came out almost twice as profitable as their competitors. And that goes all the way back to a study that Ogilvy did in 1974, all the way up to more recent studies. Same trend seems to be true. So our goal is to help you do that, to gain more market share and come out twice as profitable and still be authentic to your values. So how do you do that? I want to start off by looking at exactly what has changed or is changing in a tough economy. There are six things that we know are true in a tough economy that change in terms of customer behavior that you need to be aware of. There are two things that nobody has a crystal ball on, but we think real good indications are happening now in the economy and probably won't change. These are probably just new ways that people are responding. And the more you know about these, the more you can make choices that are really going to work for you. So I'm going to go through those as a list here so that you can have them, and then we'll talk about them much more specifically, point by point, as we go on in the call today. And the first is a really obvious point, but it's a point that a lot of people, particularly service businesses, tend to ignore in their communication with customers, which is that the average consumer, not every consumer for certain, but the average consumer right now is a little bit cranky. They're in a bit of a fearful and skeptical mood, and they're not as confident when they make purchases as they maybe have been in the past. We all sort of know that, but here's the news for you. What that means to you is two things. People are very nervous about overpromising, and so you need to really look at your communications to make sure you're not vague or inspecific or grandiose in the promises you're making. The other thing is that in this mood, you can't rely on catchy, cute, sex appeal, splash, image, sort of the things we tend to think of when we think of, for example, Madison Avenue advertising, don't work so well in this economy. A tough economy is what I like to think of as a direct marketing economy. The kinds of tactics that are used in direct marketing work much better in a tough economy. You need to be clear, specific, tell people what they're going to get, tell it to them truthfully, but also tell them in a way where they understand the emotional impact that has. We'll go into that a lot more. The second thing is that customers really are expecting more value for their dollar. Now, this does not necessarily mean they're looking for the cheapest price. It means they're really, really needing to understand the value. And that's really huge because that means you have to let them know exactly what's in it for them. You need to let them know in a way that's going to make sense both emotionally and mentally to them, both emotionally and mentally. You can't just sell mentally. You have to sell emotionally too, going back to point one, without being in any way inauthentic. We'll talk a lot more about how to do those two things. That's a lot of what today's call is about. But number three, another thing that's changing in this economy to really think about is for many consumers, price is an issue, but what is even more of an issue in a tough economy than price is cash flow or timing. So it may be that a customer will need a longer time to know that they're going to purchase from you before they do. It may mean that payment plans or other ways to do it in incremental payments instead of all at once is more important. There are a lot of different issues that can bring up, but what's important to remember is it's not always the price. Sometimes it's the cash flow. Sometimes it's simply an issue of people are close to the margin and they don't know until they pay their bills on the 15th whether they can sign up for something that you're offering on the 17th. And so if you have you have to sign up by the 13th in order to get in, they'll forego it. Whereas if you were a little more sensitive to that and had a last-minute sign-up process, you might, in fact, pick up some clients. So just something to remember. The cash flow can be as much as price in this economy. Number four, another thing to think about, for most products, including those purchased at the last minute, in this economy, people take longer to make a purchasing decision. So even if you're selling, I know we've got someone on the call tonight who is a florist, so even if you're selling flowers for birthday occasions or Labor Day or Valentine's Day or something like that, it may be that you're needing to market that 6 weeks out, but people aren't making the decision until 48 hours beforehand. Decisions are tend to be much more last minute because in a tough economy, people sort of have a is the other shoe going to drop feeling. They like to hold on to their cash as long as possible, particularly if it's a discretionary piece of spending, to make sure that they're not going to need it for something else. The reason that's important is a lot of people get a little nervous, get a little afraid that their marketing isn't working when maybe it is working. It's just people are going to make those decisions at the last minute. So that's number four of things that change in this economy. Number five, this is really an important thing to think about, which is that in any economy, most of your sales are going to come from a smaller segment of your customer base. In a tough economy, that's even more so. Now, so what do I mean by that? Well, for example, somebody did a study that said that, let me see if I can get the numbers here for you, 32% of all beer drinkers purchase 80% of all beer, and 33% of all laxative users purchase 80% of all laxatives, and then only 14% of all the people who drink gin consume 80% of the gin. So there's this, sometimes you hear it referred to as the 80-20 rule, that there's a smaller segment of your people, your customers, who are driving the most purchases. Now, some of you, I know we've got somebody who walks dogs on the line. I know we have somebody else who does nutritional counseling on the line. Some of you may be saying to me, but Mari, I get a certain amount of clients. Those are the clients. I see those clients every week. So it's one for one. 100% of my customers use 100% of the services. Yes and no. I would say of the people who are interested in what you do, 20% of them are going to go ahead and make that crossover and stay with you. So if you look at it over time, you may have some people that come and go, but 20% become the people that are there 80% of the time, if that makes any sense. It's sort of a little confusing, but if you look at your base customer base, the same people are going to be with you over time, and other people are going to come and go. Why that's important in a tough economy is looking at that customer base, that core niche, is where you're going to get a lot of information that will help you market to new people. And also, it's critical in a tough economy that you really deepen your relationships with those people. And part of that is because when the economy gets better, people will have noticed the relationships that you were building when the economy was in a rough place. And so very often, what you're doing now is not just marketing for right now, it's marketing for 3 or 4 years from now, which goes back to those studies saying that depending on how people responded to a down economy, sometimes that's times when certain businesses have really, really created a foundation for themselves. And then the sixth thing to know about a down economy, is that in a tough economy, your competitors are more than likely shrinking not only their paid-for marketing efforts, but what's very interesting to me working with service businesses is that a tough economy, people also just psychologically seem to pull back on their non-paid marketing activities also. So, for example, I know we have a woman on the line who is a divorce lawyer who was telling me that the attendance in the networking, and if you're on and you want to jump in, go ahead. That's for Lynn if you're on. But she was telling me the attendance at networking in her New Mexico-based lawyers group has gone down, even though that's paid for on an annual basis. You pay for that particular group pays for it at the beginning of the year, so if you paid in January, you're good for the rest of the year. Since the economy has gone down, what Lynn was telling me is that people are attending less. It's very common. I see that a lot. People get scared, they get overwhelmed, and they do less networking and marketing, even when it's not costing them dollars. That's good for you because that means in a tough economy, you can get noticed more because there's simply less people out there calling attention away from you. So I want to hit the pause button right here. Does anybody on the line have, you can type them in if you're on the webcast, or you can speak up if you're on the phone. Does anyone have any question about those six changes in the economy? Anybody want to share their own perceptions of what they've, of their noticing those changes in the economy? Okay, great. The next two things we don't know for sure if they're going to stay in the economy long term, but most people sort of suspect. And that is that in sort of what sometimes people have started referring to as the new economy, although I've heard that phrase a lot in the last 20 years. I think it's the new economy every 10 minutes. But certainly in this economy, green, eco-friendly, earth-friendly, environmental, however you want to call that, is certainly a huge new thing that is on the consumer's mind that I believe will stay on the consumer's mind. And connected but not necessarily the same is the concept of simple living. There was a point in time where there was psychologically an awful lot of keeping up with the Joneses. And what people are discovering, both sort of personally on an individual level, but there's also a lot of new research coming out about this, is that that does not actually make people happier. There's been some great research that says that people who purchase something new and exciting get a bounce in happiness until people around them get something cooler. So people will self-report their satisfaction on their new car as being extremely high until someone else gets a fancier new car, and then they start envying that. And, you know, it's the old concept of keeping up with the Joneses. Well, there's a lot of backlash now. People are realizing, that's not really fulfilling. Why is that great for service? That's particularly good news for service businesses. Most service businesses that I can think of, and certainly the ones that we have on the line today, we have a personal trainer, we have somebody that does nutritional health counseling and nutritional experts, we have a dog walker, we have a florist. You know, these are people that are doing things to help you make your life better, either saving you time, saving you money, making you healthier, making you stronger, making you feel more empowered in the world. That goes along very much with this simple living thing, people getting back to their values as opposed to buying the cutest, newest tchotchke and saying, well, I've got more bling. So it's all great news if you use it right. So how do you use it right? Well, let's go back to points one and two. People are in a fearful or skeptical mood, and customers are expecting more for their value. So what this means is you have to start communicating the value in a way people really get. I'll give you a great example. Yesterday I was, or this was actually about a week ago now, just feels like yesterday, I was sitting having a cup of coffee and I saw a bus go by, and on the back of this bus is this huge advertisement. It was probably a very expensive advertisement. And it's got this woman in a lime green 1950s really, really ugly swim cap. And she's got a great big smile on her face, and she's wearing a lime green ugly swimsuit as well. And it says in big letters, make the most of your best asset. And then there's a huge phone number. Now, is there anybody on the line who wants to speak up and tell me what you think that ad is selling? Okay, we do have a shy group. You can always all write in on the question and answers if you want. Oh, okay, here we go. I have Lynn says, I think it's selling swimwear. Well, yeah, that would be one guess. The name was a name, and then it had DDS at the end of it. And it literally took me a minute or so to remember. That's right, DDS means dentist. This is a dentist selling, obviously, dental services. But do you have any kind of idea what kind of dental services? Is this somebody that specializes in checkups, orthodontics, implants? I'm assuming sort of from this ad that it's probably something about cosmetic dentistry. It's very, very unclear. And I'm guessing that that ad is costing at least $1,200 a week to run. And I very much doubt that it's getting a lot of payback on it. That's an example of the kind of advertising you don't want to do. Where we do want to go towards is very clear describing emotionally the benefit, what people get out of that. So even something like make your smile your biggest asset would be better. But even that can be stronger. And part of it is you want to figure out emotionally what do they get out of it. So make your smile your biggest asset is slightly more abstract than even something as direct as be more confident is one step closer of, okay, I understand what it would be to be more confident. Also being more specific about those services. But you don't want to be too specific. Part of the way that somebody gets value for their dollar is that they know that you are an expert that can help them solve a problem. If you try to be specific about every single problem that you have the ability to solve, you're simply going to confuse your customer, and you're not going to help that relationship get stronger and more specific, because they're like, yeah, but where do I fit into the picture? And I'm going to give you an example. This is from, it's a real ad. It is from somebody I'm going to call Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith, naturopathic doctor, and has the ad has his name, and under it it says naturopathic physician, and then it has his picture, and he's a very nice-looking gentleman standing in front of some trees, and it says, your naturopath. And then here's the rest of the ad. It says, my services, neural therapy, parentheses, scars, nervous system interfaces, fields from injury or surgery, sports medicine, family medicine, anti-aging, cleansing body and brain, mercury detoxification, electromagnetic pollution solutions, and then he says free 10-minute phone consultation, and he's got his phone number. The problem with this is when I read that, I know what Jeff does, but I don't know what Jeff does for me personally. There's a lot of different things he's listed, not much emotional benefit, and not much really specific bringing me into the picture. Vinalda, were you able to join us where we can hear you? Okay, I think she's on webcast today. So I've got another example for you, which is this is a woman who works with naturopaths, who's on the line today, and she has got a site that says, solve your insomnia now, drug free. So she's working in the same market. She actually has she's hosting the naturopath to come and do this live phone event, but it's essentially the same market. The thing is, instead of saying everything the naturopath can do, she's pulled it down to one specific offer. Solve your insomnia now, drug free. The wording is also important. It's solve your insomnia. It's okay, you know what? We're going to deal with something that's hitting you emotionally. The word solve is indicating I know it's a problem. And that's another huge thing in this economy is that, and if this is especially true for people that are sometimes in the helping professions, we want to be very positive. We want to say great things are possible, and we don't want to, we're nervous about naming the pain or admitting, here's the problem you're dealing with, because we're afraid of being negative. So somebody might, in fact, I had a dog walker and say, and again, if you want to speak up, you can, I don't want to say to people, well, you know, your dogs aren't going to destroy your living room as much as if I walk them, because that sounds really negative. Well, in an economy where point one, what's different is consumers are cranky, not naming the problem isn't making people feel more positive. It's making people feel less understood. So when you see something like solve your insomnia or reduce destructive pet behavior, that makes people in a cranky economy feel like, oh, I get it. There's a value there. There's a value there that I could describe to my husband or my boss or my friend or whoever else I might be justifying my purchase to, which is also something that happens in a tough economy, is people are a little bit more conservative, not only in their own spending, but wanting other people to think they're spending wisely. So if you're naming the problem with an emotional benefit, that's going to be much more effective. So if you want to check out this new example, it's at http://memurl.com/SIVALA. And that's where we have sort of a difference. Instead of just a list of services, it's solve your insomnia, drug-free now, And then very specific things like discover the common supplement that may be your ticket to Dreamland, or 10 proven do's and don'ts for better sleep inside and outside the bedroom. So just giving us a specific sense, but unlike Jeff Smith here, who just listed a bunch of specifics he can do, it's specifics that I, the consumer, can receive. So those two things are really, really crucial. And it can be as simple as an email signature. So there's a difference between an email signature that says better design and relax and feel more comfortable in a better designed home. Those are two very different email signatures. One is about the person, you know, better design or better design through through creative insight or any, some of those things that I'm trying to use, ones that I remember a client used to use, and I can't remember them all. But it used to be about her. I design, and I do these creative things, and you're going to get something unusual and wonderful. But what she got to relax and feel less stressed in a well-designed home, it became about the customer. And, predictably, sales went up. So I'm going to pause. I'm going to open up the phone lines and see if anybody has any questions about anything we've said so far. Okay, does anybody have any questions about that so far? Okay, great group. You seem to be just quietly getting your stuff there. So the first thing to do in a tough economy is get really, really, really clear about what is that specific emotional benefit and how are you putting that in terms that make sense to the customer. And doing that without trying to do a lot of splash, just really saying, here it is, here's what you're going to get. The next thing is really being authentic and matching the mood of the customer, acknowledging how they feel. We sort of touched on that. Along with that goes this idea of people need to have a way to understand the value they're going to get. So there is a difference between saying, you're going to get great value, and finding some way that you can either give people a measurement of value that someone else has received or put them in the picture and ask them, have they ever imagined? Actually, Sarah, you're still on the line, yes? No. Sarah went very quiet. Sarah, if you're there and you can unmute yourself, say hello to us. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and use Sarah anyway. Sarah's site is E-L-E-Y wellness.com. And she's a trainer. And she's got these great, she's got these two testimonials on her testimonial page. And the perfect example. First one says, after working with Sarah for just a few weeks, I've seen tremendous results in that time. Her unique philosophy focused on a total wellness diet, flexibility, cardio, and strength. I've never felt stronger or healthier. Sarah is positive, encouraging, and tailors each workout to make it challenging and fun. Okay, great testimonial. Makes us like Sarah, makes us know a lot about what Sarah can do and the whole range of it. She's got another testimonial. I just wore a pair of jeans that I have not worn since 2001. Before I started with Sarah, I couldn't even get them on. A few months into our session, I could get them on, but not really close them up. Now they fit. Yay. So that second testimonial, and there are certainly lots of good reasons to use the first, but the second testimonial is an example of something you really want to build on in a tough economy. What's going on there is it's a story. It's a picture that you can put yourself in. It's a story that is specific enough that you can imagine the details. You know, you can see this woman trying on the pants and not being able to get them on at all and then trying to get them on, but they're not really comfortable. You can sort of go along with that story. And lots of studies indicate that when you can give people that kind of emotional story, that kind of picture, we literally remember it and trust it longer. It's why most teachers of anything use parable and example, and it's even why math teachers use word problems. As much as we hate word problems, is that for a lot of people it really creates a memory thing. So I'm getting very specific. And also, you know, I just wore a pair of jeans that I had not worn since 2001. Before I started with Sarah, I couldn't even get them on. Real indicating of, yeah, there's the pain, there it is, not hiding that in the slightest. So those are things to think about in your messaging. And when I say think about them, most service people have them. For example, I found this on Sarah's site. There it is, boom, boom, boom. So the question is, how do you pull out the parts of your messaging that are most effective in this economy and bring them to the forefront where people can see them?
Hey, Mari.
Yes.
This is Louise.
Well, hello, Louise.
I've tried to submit a couple questions, and I don't know if you've gotten them via the...
Okay, Louise, well, just a moment then, and I'll let me finish where we're at, and we'll check and see.
Okay, cool.
So going back to what I was saying there with pulling that out is looking at that, pulling that out so that it becomes a useful part of your marketing. And one of the ways to do that is this next piece, which is if you can't do it as a, well, here's a testimonial, here's, you know, Frank's story or Sally's story, then you can do it as, have you ever? Can you imagine that? And that can be another way to do that. So I'm just going to pause for a second. First off, I want to check, Sarah, are you still on, and do you want to make any comment about what we're just sharing with you as an example? Okay. Apparently, we're continuing to have technical difficulties. My apologies. This was supposed to repair for last week's technical difficulties. Now, Louise, I know your questions are not coming through, so you want to go ahead and just tell me verbally what they are?
Yeah. You said name the problem with, I was wondering if you could restate that, you know, the example of that it's okay to say less damage from your pet on the furniture. Could
sure.
you restate that basic principle?
Yeah, the basic idea is that a lot of people are so afraid of not being negative that they don't go ahead and hit the problem head on. So, for example, on the site I was using an example of Solve Your Insomnia Now, an earlier version of that was feel better and more energetic. Well, feeling better and more energetic is a positive result of not having insomnia. It also tends to feel to the consumer a little bit more vague, and you're not really hitting me where my pain is, which is I have insomnia, right? A better behaved pet is different than a pet who's not destroying your favorite rug. And this goes back to sort of that other piece I was saying of you can do the have you ever. Have you ever come home to find that your beloved pet destroyed a favorite belonging? That puts people instantly in the story, in the emotional relationship to it. And that will ultimately have more power in creating credibility for you that you're not just selling them something because you want to do it. You're selling them something because it's going to actually help their life. Does that make sense, Louise?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Sure.
I wish I could remember my other questions.
Okay, well, again, we seem to be having, and I know Sarah had some questions. I think we're having technical difficulties again, and I apologize to people listening in. I'm working to deal with them. So one other thing I'll throw out there, if there's anyone else trying to use that question and answer it's not working, send an email to mari@mycreativeprosperity.com, and I will be checking my emails throughout this rest of this call so we can help with that.
Mari, are you
okay.
still there?
So we were talking about, you know,
hey,
step
Mari.
One on your messaging.
Hey, Mari, I think someone's trying to get through.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Sarah.
Oh, well, hi, Sarah. There you are.
Hi. I was on the website because I didn't have to hold the phone, and then I couldn't get you my question. So.
Okay.
I'm back on the phone now.
You're back on the phone. I appreciate that. I apologize for the technical difficulties today. What was your question, Sarah?
Yeah, I just really appreciated your feedback on that testimonial, and I was just wondering, you know, kind of an example of maybe how I could use that testimonial in, you know, like a different way for someone who maybe doesn't see my website.
Right. Okay, well, that's great, Sarah. So here's a great example. Your website, it says strength, balance, function. I'm assuming you're sort of using that as a tagline?
Yes, correct.
So those are all, they're nice, they're benefits, they're very strong, they're part of what you do. I'm wondering, and it isn't as short, but I'm wondering in possibly, certainly somewhere on your homepage and signatures to emails, things like that, you couldn't do something like, say, you know, Sarah got in jeans she hadn't gotten in to since 1991. What could you do?
Oh, I like that.
So, just that idea of, wait a minute, someone did this cool thing, what could I do? It forces me to put myself in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Versus strength, balance, function, which is nice, and it does have some emotion to it, but it's abstract. It's one step away from me being in the story.
Yeah, definitely.
Does that make sense?
It does, a lot. Yep,
and that's an example of marketing that you can do in a flush economy versus marketing you can do in a tough economy. Because in a flush economy, people are less afraid about separating themselves from their money, so they're more likely to go, yeah, I need strength, balance, and function.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a tough economy, you need to do it one step farther and say, what could you do?
I got it.
Or even, what haven't you been able to do?
Mm.
Which, you know, there is really a sense of some baby boomers might squirm at that. Back to Louise's question about naming the pain. Oh, that's painful. But it also might get people's attention in a major way.
Mm.
I used to be able to run up the stairs at work, and now I can hardly walk up them. Maybe I ought to call Sarah.
Great, thank you.
Sure. Okay. So to recap the steps we've done so far, one was facts, not splash. One was getting that emotional benefit and this naming the pain, being authentic with that, and turning that into some kind of proof, some kind of way people can put themselves in the story. And then the last thing to do in a tough economy that's really sort of crucial is to ask yourself, where is that crucial niche? Where is that core niche? So, for example, and like I said, we've got someone on the line who takes care of pets, and we were talking about, you know, your dog not being destructive. You know, have you ever come home to find that your dog ate your favorite possession? That's naming the pain. But another thing is to say, well, wait a minute, of my core niche, of the people that I know I can count on week after week, those are the people that are going to re-up. Every time it's time to re-up with me and sign up again, those are the folks who are happening to show up with their checkbooks. What is changing for them in this economy? So, for example, if we're looking at the dog walking niche, people may be going out of town less due to the economy. So you may have less kennel stays and that kind of other kind of animal care. But if they're going out of town less, is it possible to have, you know, to market something like, have a stay-at-home vacation, we're going to give you a busy day pass or a busy week pass where you can sign up for a certain amount of dog walks that we'll do, that you can do when you're at home and just don't have the time and energy to do it. Now, I don't know about anyone else on the line, but I would love that. To have already set up something with a dog walker that I could just be like, you know what, forget today. Today's out of control. Take my dog. That is like a vacation without a vacation. So thinking about how the economy is affecting people in your niche and then what you can do to work with that. Last week we talked to a florist who was working with dentists as opposed to restaurants, because restaurants are being very, very hard hit by the economy shifts. And the dental field is somewhere where they're actually, because of new technology, things are just possible that weren't available before, which may be why this woman had her ad on the bus that we talked about in the beginning of the call that didn't work. There is things available that weren't before. Dentists still have an awful hard time getting people to go to the dentist. So there is a whole market happening in upscale, spa-like dental experiences. So sometimes you have to shift a niche based on an economy, or sometimes you just really notice what is changing in the economy that might be affecting your clients, and how do you at least acknowledge it? Anybody got any questions about that? I'm going to hop on my email really quick and see if people who are not able to get through the web can. All right. To my knowledge, nobody's written in another question.
Hey, Mari?
Yes, that was Louise.
Yeah, this is Louise again. How do you find out all this stuff about, you know, dentists doing well?
How did I find that out? It's by talking to people. For those of you who know me a little bit better, I have, I'm the dental karma girl. I've had the worst experiences over a lifetime with dentistry than you can imagine, and I've had to have complete mouth reconstruction a couple of times. So I talk to a lot of dentists. But how do you find it out is by talking to your clients. And some of you I know are in business building phases where you still don't really know 100% exactly what niche you want to go to. And this is where I recommend the cheapest and best marketing program ever, which is the afternoon walk or the lunch marketing program, which is you set up appointments to either have an afternoon walk or a lunch date with people, and you simply ask them what's true for you, what's going on in your business, what's going on in your life, and you listen for trends. Most of the time, they will tell you. All you have to do is ask a question and then think about, how is that going to affect me? So, for example, I read in Time Magazine last week that the restaurant business was being hit hard, but I didn't have to read in Time Magazine that the restaurant business was being hit hard because, first of all, it's common sense if gas and food prices are going up, but second of all, when I go to restaurants, I ask people how the business is going, and they tell me. Make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
It's amazing to me what people will tell you if you ask. They're delighted to hear it. And there are many, 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 many businesses, especially service businesses, that have been built on what I call the lunch plan, which is you just talk to people, and they tell you what they need, and then you say to yourself, self, how can I serve that need? So, Sarah, I don't know much about this, but you said you were trying a new program of instead of doing one-on-one personal training, doing small group personal training, yes?
Yes, that is correct. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Okay,
What caused you to do that?
Well, it was at a conference this summer, and it's a model that other trainers are using very successfully and have for the past 5 years. And I was very intrigued because there's more income potential, and also I've been thinking since January, how can I really thrive in this economy when people are, you know, starting to cut back? And so what I've been spending my time doing is drafting a letter that really gives them, like what you're saying, the emotional value and benefit of semi-private training with 2 to 4 people at a much lower cost. And really, it actually benefits them more than one-on-one because of the group dynamic. And other, you know, chiropractors use it, physical therapists use it, athletes train this way with strength coaches. It's like, you know, this guy was saying, you know, one-on-one is a model that doesn't really work, and we've just always done it that way. So that's
right.
My reason for changing.
So what you did is the other piece is you learned it by listening to other people in your industry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Goodness knows, if anybody's doing something smart, steal it. really, seriously, if somebody's doing something that works, copy them. Copy them now. Don't wait. Just copy them. I was interested, Sarah, about how you came to that because I have another call. And Elizabeth, I don't think you're on the line, but if you are, speak up because I'm talking about you. who's a belly dancer, who went from, you know, the traditional way to do belly dancing is to do a belly dance class, and then she, because she works a lot with very specific postural, almost physical therapy type stuff and really getting people to understand how their muscles really work, she went to the private one-on-ones and discovered her people were saying, I want someone else who gets this. I want someone else to talk to about it, to practice with, to play with.
Yes.
So they told me, I need a practice buddy.
Yes.
Which is what I'm thinking also would be very true in a personal trainer, is having someone who's, you know, the expertise of the personal trainer, but also a buddy.
Yes, definitely. And I think it sort of takes the pressure off just that one person, you know, needing to perform. They have other people there that they can share with, you know, oh, how was your weekend? You know, oh, I'm struggling with my diet. And, you know, maybe they have, you know, suggestions to give each other where it's not just about the trainer and just about that one client. They can really benefit more, I think, from the group dynamic.
Yes, exactly. It helps put them in the story. For example, I do that with my my entrepreneur boot camp and also with my money class, that I discovered if I had people who have what I call money buddies, they do much better.
Mm.
So it, what's interesting about that, and this is where, this is going back to this concept I talked about at the beginning of the call, the authentic entrepreneur, is that when you're truly authentic, often things that are partially marketing end up increasing the quality of the service. So when I first did the Money Buddy thing, I was like, you know, I'm starting this out. If you know someone, I'll give you a discount if you bring your Money Buddy, because nobody knows I'm doing this but me, and I'm trying to share. But what I discovered is people who had a Money Buddy, their wealth increase over the class was much greater, was like 40% greater than people who didn't have a money buddy. So the actual effect was greater. Now, that might be something, certainly, Elizabeth, if you're listening, really try to find a way to quantify the changes people are making and show how having somebody with them helps that. Same thing for you, Sarah. It would be very interesting to find a way to track data of the small group versus the one-on-one. So, again, people can put themselves in their story and say, wow, it does work better. Okay, very, very cool stuff. So that other thing about the about this authentic piece and really tracking and finding out what's going on is back to one of the points we talked about is cranky customers, but also customers expecting more value. Help whatever your service is, whether it's dog walking or delivering flowers or personal training or website copywriting or, you know, doing calls on insomnia. Help people track where they are now when they first come to you. So, for example, the Solve Your Insomnia Now, Vinalda, if you're on the line, which I think you are, you just can't tuck back, you really want to do something like invite people to say, how many nights have you had insomnia in the last 30 nights? And you can define that however you can say what the parameters are of that. So that when they've taken your class, listened to your health experts, at the end, you can go back to them and say, now, how much insomnia have you had in the last 30 nights? Now, this does two things. Obviously, it's great information for you to have for marketing. But very often, people don't know where they're at when they start. Dog walking, right? My dog just needs to be walked. What do you mean, measure where I'm at? Well, ask yourself, you know, even saying something like on a subjective level of a scale of 1 to 10, how much behavioral problems do you have with your dog? Notice if that's changed after 30 days of me walking the dog. Sarah, you're in an easier business because most of us have some measurements there, whether it's our weight or our cholesterol level. You know, there's usually some measurements. But find things to measure because often people don't know themselves. often when people get a service, you know, divorce lawyer, there's a good one. Obviously, being in divorce is an awful experience. It's unhappy, what have you. So how do you measure that? Well, you might say, ask somebody, how clear do you feel about the process? How clear do you know what's going on? How in control do you feel? Then after we've sat down and done the consult and written your plan, et cetera, how do you feel? Because often people, when they're buying a service, they're not quite always sure what they're buying. And very, very often, people try to sell the process of what they do versus the result. That make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so Louise, you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still on the line.
You are, and you've got a nice loud phone. So,
okay.
So you do help with helping people sort of streamline their systems and make their communications more effective, right?
Right. Although, actually, I have a specific question I'd like to ask you that I think is along the lines of what we're talking about here, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay, so the theater organization that we both know, whom I probably shouldn't name just because I'm going to say that they're having cash flow problems, well, big, big whoop. So what I want to suggest to them is that they set up a PayPal account, and I think this is something you and I have talked about. And what I'm wondering is, in an economy like this, is an organization likely to say, no, we don't want to do PayPal just because it's a new thing?
Is that another thing people are like, okay, so that's a perfect example where what you need to do is help people measure it. So, for example, one of, and I'm just going to fill in background for the benefit of those listening, one of the reasons is that we had originally talked about using the PayPal system was to encourage low-dollar donor amounts because of realizing that the niche is slightly changing and that there may be a higher number of people willing to make a low-dollar amount than the same money coming from a smaller number of individuals willing to make a high-dollar donation during this economy. You know, the idea that one person who wants to do $5,000, you can actually make more money if you get $5,000 who want to do $3. So that was sort of the concept.
The way
you would work with this resistance to change that you're talking about, this new stuff, which is all the things we're talking about, cranky, cash flow, need to see themselves in the picture, and you don't really understand the value. You know, they're pretty much all of the 6 points we started with is what you're talking about, coming out as a reluctance to change because it's new. One of the ways you would do that is to encourage them to get some very clear numbers of saying, numerically, how many donors do you have right now donating between whatever it is, between $20 and $200. Numerically, how many donors do you have donating above that? What happens if, sort of back to what we did with Sarah, what could you do? What happens if you get 100 people that are donating $100 every 6 weeks or every 8 weeks or every year? It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Do the math for them. Give it a measurable.
Okay.
What happens if, where are you now? What's the measurement of where you're at now? Where I'm at now is I can't get the jeans on. Where I'm at now is my dog, literally, okay, this is a true story from my life, my dog ate the cover off the hot tub. Didn't know they could, didn't know they would, but they did. Okay, so measurable, named the pain, there it is. So you can say, you know what, here's the pain, theater organization, you only have 50 active donors in the last 18 months or whatever it is. Name the pain. Get them to measure that. Put them in a story with an emotional benefit. What happens if this other great thing happens? And then talk about how what you're doing can get there. So what you were saying, Louise, was, well, I want them on PayPal. That is a how. Nobody cares about
right.
how till you've sold them on what.
Right, right.
So when I said you do this thing of streamlining people's communication processes, they don't care how you do that till they care why they care. If you can say, I can get you twice as many people donating, or twice as many people filling out your response card, or twice as many people saying yes to your opt-in page and getting on your marketing list, now I care about what you do. But if you just say, I make the forums easier to read, and I place things, and I make things more clear, and I clean up, I don't care until I know what it's going to do for me. I don't care about the six minerals that can make me sleep better until you've told me it can make me sleep better, and instead of not sleeping 15 nights out of every 30, I'll not sleep 2 nights out of every 30. Now I care. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah, that makes a great deal of sense.
Goes back to our Jeff Harris, who was telling me that he does neural therapy, sports medicine, family medicine, anti-aging, all of that is his how. He never mentions what in the entire ad.
Right, okay.
So let's review, because those are huge points about marketing for a service business. You must tell them what it is they are getting in a factual, non-splashy manner. So instead of a weird ad on a bus that I have to think about, be more confident on your job interview, or be more confident on your date, or whatever it is. Get me a specific fact. Get an emotional benefit. So help me feel the emotional impact of that. Fact, emotional benefit, then by both naming the pain and telling the story, put me in the process, the getting in the genes. Once you've